it feeds into everything that is Dubai. And therefore, if construction were to stop, if the cranes were to stop and be dismantled, will we still have an economy?
And people put down a 20% deposit, which was $1 million in cash. And still, we had thousands of people queuing to buy those.
So who's buying, Faisal?
These are the international buyers.
Who are they?
So
let's break them down. You're seeing with off-plan sales coming back, what we're seeing with mobs at off-plan sale centers, you know, scenes that we have seen before. You were around, I was around. We've seen those. Does any of that give you any jitters?
The top city out of London Heathrow is Charles de Gaulle, and vice versa. So there's already an exchange of people and capital. And today, Riyadh is already the top destination out of Dubai and vice versa. So we have that complementary interplay in place.
Yes.
So it's very positive to see another city
yes.
rising as a global hub in the region.
Yeah, I'm saying yes, yes, because we see that in the price of airline tickets.
Precisely, yes.
While the market may sustain, will the resilience, that resilience, will it sustain and to what extent? Hello and welcome to Taht al-Hawa ma'a Siba Audi. Today we're going to talk about the Dubai residential property market. Add reduced purchasing power caused by soaring inflation to record high borrowing costs. Combine that with a global economic slowdown and a clear picture will start to emerge. That of a global housing market losing steam. When adjusted for inflation, the Global Property Guide report issued in the first quarter of this year finds that house prices in the first quarter of this year globally rose in only 19 markets and declined in 42. The US market is on a decline after a decade-long strong house price growth. Europe's housing markets are also slowing sharply, as are the Asian markets, but not those in Dubai. Dubai was recently named as the world's sixth best city to live and prosper. It is top of the bill when it comes to the region. Dubai residential values have risen, in fact, for 11 quarters, the last of which was only the third quarter of this year. Today's valuations are 30% higher than the first quarter of 2020, the pre-COVID quarter, of course. But they remain 7% below prices in 2014. Apartments in Dubai now sell for an average of 1,300 dirhams per square foot, villas at 1,580 per square foot. And on the Palm Jumeirah, properties are exchanging hands at 5,520 dirhams per square foot. In fact, Dubai has emerged as the world's busiest $10 million plus homes market during the first half, with 176 sales in this exclusive price bracket. Meanwhile, the number of under-construction homes throughout the emirate continues to steadily increase. So, what is driving this market? A question I will pose to my guest here today, Faisal Durrani. Faisal is the partner and head of research MENA at Knight Frank. Hello, Faisal. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
We are off air today.
Yes, we are.
We are off air today. So this big question of what is underpinning the Dubai market is always on everyone's mind. Let me take you a bit further into that question and hit with the harder question. All of a sudden, a lot of people will say that Dubai is real estate. And if construction were to stop in Dubai, Dubai's economy will come to a halt. Do you agree with that statement?
That is quite a sweeping statement. I think, yes, real estate and construction is a big component of GDP growth here. It's about 20 to 30%, according to our estimates. And I think if we think about the drivers that are underpinning house price growth at the moment, I know it sounds strange to cast our minds back to the beginning of the pandemic, but this is a sentiment-driven market. It is an emerging market. And the decisive response by the leadership here to containing the spread of COVID really did inject a significant amount of a feel-good factor into the market. And, you know, we're almost 4 years on from that, and we are still benefiting from it. And it's not just something that people feel in the air. We actually see it in the economic KPIs. We've got non-oil sector PMI readings that have been in expansionary territory now for more than 2 years. And this, of course, is a survey of businesses in the non-oil sector, just to get a feel of how they feel about prospects for growth, what they think about the future of the economy. And that has been doing really well, which is anomalous on the global stage. And, you know, us as a business, as Knight Frank, we feel the impact of that in the form of rising demand for commercial office space. So, for instance, in the first half of this year, we had 580,000 square feet of new office space requirements, which is about 25% more than the same period last year. And actually, again, that is unusual on the global stage, because in our market, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Riyadh, Jeddah, we've actually run out of offices. We're operating, our best buildings are operating at 90 to 100% occupancy, which is, you know, way higher than it is in other cities in the world.
But it's not just about how much real estate constitutes of the GDP. It is the fact that it is the GDP. It feeds into everything that is Dubai. And therefore, if construction were to stop, if the cranes were to stop and be dismantled, will we still have an economy? Will we still have that wheel?
I think so. I think we've passed that tipping point where Dubai has become self-sustaining. And it isn't just about real estate. It is obviously a key component, but so is hospitality and tourism and the financial and business services sectors are key drivers. And we have done some analysis on this, and we're seeing other sectors like manufacturing, for example, playing a bigger role in driving economic growth too. It was 10% last year was driven by the manufacturing sector. And look, to be honest, there are obviously risks in any market cycle, and as this is still an emerging market, we don't have much of a history to look back on to allow us to properly forecast what might come next.
So we've only had two cycles.
This is our third cycle.
Third?
Yeah.
So what's a cycle?
A cycle is the bottom of the market in terms of prices, the peak, and then the next bottom. So it's sort of trough to trough. And we've had two previous cycles. The first one we call the gold rush, which was 2002 to 2011. And we had prices increasing in that cycle for about 6 years. Our second cycle we call the Expo Factor. That's because that cycle was underpinned by Dubai winning the rights to host the Expo, even though it won the rights to do that in November 2014, and the Expo was 7 years later, that still underpinned house price growth. And in that second cycle, we had prices rising for almost 4 years. We're in our third cycle now. We call this the COVID comeback. And we've had prices rising for about 4 years. So it's very difficult for us to look back and say we've got so many weeks, months, or years left of price growth. But what we can do is look at individual market drivers, which we can talk through.
So are we to expect those cycles to shorten as the market matures? Are we to expect them, in fact, to expand as the market matures?
So typically, a market cycle in mature markets around the world runs for about 8 years. Our previous two cycles were about 9 or 10 years. So yes, they could shorten, but what we are seeing in the limited history we've got is less volatility, and every cycle starts at a higher point than the previous one. So that's what we're seeing.
And you think this is sustainable, considering the makeup, of course, of the Dubai economy? I see you nodding, but also considering geopolitical issues, especially this recent crisis that we are living at the moment.
Sure. I mean, look, there's a few key things that we need to pay attention to understand how this cycle might play out. I think the first, we need to not forget that Dubai is a global hub. And the world has been expecting a recession since the start of the pandemic, and it hasn't happened. That's not to say one can't happen. We've got pretty positive data coming out of the US, less positive data from Europe and China. And if the world is tipped into a recession, eventually it will arrive here as well, despite the fact that we've got a very healthy and strong local economy. When it comes to the conflict, you know, without talking too much about that, anything that has the ability to influence oil prices is a risk. And the IMF has said for every 10% increase in oil prices, you get a 0.4% decrease in global economic growth and a 0.5% increase in inflation. The challenge with rising inflation is, of course, the only lever central banks have is to raise interest rates, which are already pretty high. So that could pose a challenge. And then we've got supply issues, but we don't feel that's too much of a concern right now.
So my question is, how much of a challenge are rising interest rates, considering that they have been rising and very, very quickly in the last almost 2 years now? Despite that, we've seen that we just mentioned all the numbers and we've seen the resilience of the Dubai market. So while the market may sustain, will the resilience, that resilience, will it sustain and to what extent?
So today our central bank interest rate is 5.5%. At this time last year, it was 4.4%. So I mean, be in no doubt, you know, people who live here, normal people who have jobs, who are on variable mortgage rates, they are feeling the pinch of rising mortgage outgoings. But the uniqueness of this particular cycle is we've got 82% of our buyers who are purchasing using cash. It has never been that high. Even if we rewind back to pre-GFC, it was about 50% of the market driven by cash. And look, it's not because the banks aren't lending against real estate. It's just that Dubai has become such a magnet for global capital, particularly ultra-high net worth individuals who are pouring their cash into real estate here. So you may argue that the market is then shielded from rising interest rates. But the reality is that in 12 months, in 18 months, in 24 months, some of these individuals who are buying with cash will be looking to refinance. And the question is, where will interest rates be at that point in time? Will it be affordable? Because if interest rates go up, it makes it expensive to borrow, not just to purchase real estate, but also to develop real estate. So that is the challenge around interest rates. And that is a big risk.
So these buyers who are coming in 80% in cash, mainly, I presume, international buyers, are they making homes here? Are they buying second homes? And in a way, that's great news. But in another way, that's not so good news for the people who actually live and work in Dubai, because all of a sudden, Dubai property is no longer affordable for me because there's so much demand from outside and there is so much cash coming into it.
Yeah, you're right. So we've carried out a study of global high net worth individuals to understand why they like investing in real estate here. And to our surprise, two-thirds of them actually say they want a second home in Dubai. And this is a huge change to what we've seen in previous market cycles, which was driven purely by speculation. And we remember that in 2009, we had a 60% drop in prices over the course of 6 months. We haven't seen that level of volatility since because there's less speculative activity. And as we said a few moments ago, this market is still maturing. It isn't mature yet. So we're always looking for signs of maturity. And these buyers are paying record prices for properties on, say, the Palm Jumeirah. And they're spending the same amount again on refurbing or customizing them and almost removing that property from the natural cycling in the market. So if you reduce stock in areas of high demand, that is only going to continue to sustain prices in an upward direction. So that is a big, big change for us.
So does the increased demand justify increasing the supply? So if you have all that demand on Palm Jumeirah, et cetera, all the highly sought areas in Dubai, does that justify increasing the supply and expanding the city and making it ready for even a bigger influx? And how? I know you and I are not the developers or the people, let's say, laying out the strategy for the Emirate, but how do you plan for that?
It's a good question. I mean, we currently track the supply in Dubai. And look, no two property cycles are ever the same. And one of the biggest quirks in this cycle has been the relatively slow response of developers to bring real estate to the market to tap into the demand. It's only really in the last 18 months or so that we have seen a change, and there has been a lot of off-plan product. To try and break it down, at the moment, we are tracking about 78,000 units that are under construction today that are due to be delivered in the next 6 years. So if we average that out over the next 6 years, that gives us around 13,000 units per year, 1-3. Historically, Dubai has had 30,000 units per year delivered, right? So we're expecting two-thirds less. That's on the supply side. Then if we start thinking about demand, the government has some new population growth targets as part of the D33 Dubai economic agenda. The population is supposed to hit 5.6 million by 2033 when Dubai turns 200 from 3.5 million today. And further to that, by 2040, the population is supposed to approach 8 million. So assuming we achieve that population growth target, Dubai needs 70,000 homes per year, every year, between now and then. And even if we only achieve 50% of that growth target, we need 35,000 homes per year. And as I said, we're delivering 13,000 homes for the next 6 years. So on the supply and demand side, there's a clear mismatch. And the challenge is, you know, opening up new development sites that have infrastructure in place. That is a very, very big challenge and requires a lot of heavy investment.
What's the likelihood of all these forecasts or estimates overshooting, being way too optimistic?
It's a good question. Historically, our population has grown at about 5% per year. So actually, it's within that historical growth framework to achieve a population of close to 8 million in 17 years. The challenge will be, how do we house all these individuals? Because at a really basic fundamental level, we're talking about more than doubling the population, which sort of suggests we need to more than double our housing stock, which is a big ask in such a short period of time. So that is the challenge.
No doubt. I mean, that is a huge challenge and a huge demand on resources and also all the infrastructure that you need to support that population growth. And you see that is also growing along in parallel, along with the growth of that comes with the demand.
I mean, right now, I think the what appears to be the goal of the government is to utilize areas where the infrastructure is already in place. So we're seeing the city drift southward towards Expo City, towards the Palm Jebel Ali, where, of course, the infrastructure was put in place pre-GFC in anticipation of the Palm Jebel Ali going live. So we feel that that is probably going to be a concentration. There'll be a lot of concentration of development in that area around Al Maktoum International Airport as well. And, of course, Palm Jebel Ali recently commenced sales, which is an indication that the government is trying to stretch the city in that direction. But if going further inland, without highways, utilities, and supporting lifestyle infrastructure, it's difficult to see how that can happen in such a short period of time.
And, of course, you travel around the region, you travel around the Gulf, other Gulf countries, and you see a massive boom is happening there as well. So what is that going to affect, do you think, the demand for property in Dubai, or is that already at a much more advanced stage?
I think you know the answer to that question. But in terms of sort of global appeal, Dubai has a very unique position in terms of global high net worth minds. It's the lifestyle that they have access to here. It's the safety and security, the rule of law. Softer things like the climate also plays a big part in attracting investors from around the world. When we look at a market like Saudi, which has just started to reinvigorate itself, the government has so far committed more than $1 trillion to new real estate and infrastructure projects. And that's only the tip of the iceberg. You know, that's probably 25% of what they have planned. It's a reinvention of the country. New cities are being created out of thin air to house huge numbers of expats that are expected to arrive. And I think that will take time. And also, in terms of eating into, you know, Dubai's demand, if you want to look at it that way, in our region, we've only got one global hub city, and that is Dubai today. There is definitely room for another hub city. And in Saudi, the demographics are reversed to the UAE. It's mostly locals, a smaller minority are expats. And also 60% of the population is below the age of 30. So you've got a young, dynamic, well-educated population that wants to make a difference locally. And, you know, there are signs that you can look for to understand how cities complement each other rather than compete. And if we look at Europe, London, Paris, Frankfurt, all within an hour's flying time of each other. And what you find is the top city out of London Heathrow is Charles de Gaulle, and vice versa. So there's already an exchange of people and capital. And today, Riyadh is already the top destination out of Dubai and vice versa. So we have that complementary interplay in place.
Yes.
So it's very positive to see another city
yes.
rising as a global hub in the region.
Yeah, I'm saying yes, yes, because we see that in the price of ticket, airline tickets to
precisely, to, yes.
Yeah, and Dubai and back. So knowing what you know and having said all this and very, very nicely looked at the numbers for demand, still, what you're seeing with off-plan sales coming back, what we're seeing with mobs at off-plan sales centers, you know, scenes that we have seen before. You were around. I was around. We've seen those. Does any of that give you any jitters?
Not at the moment. I think the concern is around the rising proportion of off-plan sales. So if we look at the market today, we're at about 50-50 in terms of ready versus off-plan. Mm. Back in 2007, off-plan accounted for about 62% of the market. And as I say, you know, you cannot secure a mortgage on a property that is off-plan. You've got to put down a cash deposit. And if we look at somewhere like the villas on Palm Jebel Ali, the starting price was $5 million. And people put down a 20% deposit, which was $1 million in cash. And still, we had thousands of people queuing to buy those.
So who's buying, Faisal? Who's buying?
These are the international buyers.
Who are they?
So
let's break them down.
The Dubai Land Department stopped publishing buyer data by nationality in 2018 or 2019. But what we can do is look at sales through Knight Frank, so our slice of the market, which gives you a flavor of what's going on. For the first 9 months of this year, Chinese buyers, British buyers, Emiratis, and Indian nationals were more than 50% of our buyer pool. And that is not unusual. It's what we've seen in the past. And
not Saudis?
Not in the top four. Mm. They would have accounted for the top 10. And historically, Saudis are the biggest Arab national buyer and investor in this market. And if we go back to our study of global high net worth individuals and try and understand the actual appetite to purchase, we found it was highest amongst buyers from China, Hong Kong, and Singapore. 90% of them were keen to invest in Dubai this year, and their starting ticket price was $26 million for a single home. So that just gives you an idea of the depth of demand yes. to be here.
But how much of those primary residential sales... prime residential sales are first sales, not secondary sales.
You mean for completed property?
No. Sorry, I meant that are these always new properties being bought, or is there a churn, or is there a is it being bought for investment, for example?
So when we asked these buyers, why are you looking at the Dubai market? 2/3 told us that they want it as a second home. And if we look at somewhere like the Palm Jumeirah, that's now 18 years old. The villas are aging, which is why we see people spending so much money on refurbishing and customizing. Mm. And when they do that, they remove the property from the natural cycling on the market. And actually, you know, you see this in more mature markets where, you know, we call that a buy to leave. Because they don't live in it all the time. Mm. But they preserve it as a place that they can visit a couple of months a year, use as a holiday, lease it out at other times. But they're buying it for a long-term hold. And again, this is a very, very big difference.
I can't help but say that there is that feel when you walk down any of the fronts on Palm Jumeirah, or for that matter, you know, you walk in between many of the high-rises in the city, you get the sense that a lot of these houses are not lived in.
And look, that's entirely normal. In any given city, about 20 to 25% of stock is always in a state of flux. Either it's not sold, it's a buy-to-let, it's a holiday home, it's changing hands, there's a dispute of some kind around it. So that is pretty normal to see that. But what we are hearing from the international buyers is that Dubai is now a serious location for second homes for them. Mm. And that hasn't ever been the case. And it's not only just the sentiment. I mean, if we look at the locations of some of the buyers that we are seeing as a business entering our market, they're brand new. We're seeing buyers from Switzerland, from Monaco, and it all comes down to value for money or affordable luxury. Mm. For instance...
So we're competing with Monaco.
We are competing with Monaco.
Interesting.
Which is brand new as well. Mm. So $1 million in Dubai's prime residential areas of the Palm Jumeirah, Emirates Hills, and Jumeirah Bay Island will get you approximately 1,100 square feet of residential real estate. That $1 million will get you 180 square feet in Monaco, right? And four times less
Monaco
in London.
Monaco is that much smaller, though.
True.
Okay.
But it's value for money.
Right.
And arguably a better lifestyle.
And yes, I can vouch for that.
Yes.
But desirability, I mean, at the moment, Monaco has got that reputation or that image in people's minds. And it comes from its history, its legacy, as it were, and all the black and white movies and the brown and yellow,
yes.
The sepia photos and all that. So that makes it somehow a little bit more desirable. There is that. I'm sure you've heard it from a lot of people that you meet. There is that impression that Dubai is all steel and glass, almost not so real.
True. I mean, look, Dubai the UAE is a young country. Mm. Our real estate market is only 2 decades old. It will take time to establish that sort of a profile in people's minds. But for today, it's one of the most glamorous, one of the most cosmopolitan cities in the world. And, you know, when it comes to safety and security, the ease of doing business, the huge range of residential visa options that have been set out by the government, the tax benefits compared to other locations in the West, you know, you start adding all these things together and it makes it a really, you know, desirable location to be located.
Yes. I mean, when I'm in London, anyone that I say asks me, where did you come from? And I say, Dubai. Oh, Dubai, you know, you're so lucky. And we agree with them, of course. Let me ask you, though, about, are we talking about a Dubai for expats? When we talk about all these numbers, when we talk about all these sales and the demand and the supply that's coming on top, is there an alternative Dubai property market? The market that expats cannot buy in, what is that like?
Good question. I mean, I think the government has set out a plan now to try and limit some of the knowledge capital drain that has happened historically, which is why we have a whole range of new residential visa options. It's designed to attract and retain talent. And if you create talent pools, you attract businesses to be located near those talent pools. And ultimately, that then attracts high net worth individuals to be located in those high demand areas. So I think that's what we're seeing right now. And if we're trying to identify cities in the world that are broadly similar, you probably have to look to Asia, to places like Singapore and Hong Kong. But of course, the draconian lockdown measures during the COVID pandemic led to an influx of Singaporean, Hong Kong businesses and high net worth individuals who permanently did relocate here. Mm-hmm. And we dealt with a lot of those businesses. So really, today in the world, Dubai is a bit of a superstar.
The numbers that we refer to and your reports, do they take into consideration the areas where only Emiratis can deal in property?
So when the data that we're looking at, we're talking predominantly about freehold areas where international buyers are permitted to own real estate.
Mm. So you have no visibility to the other Dubai. That's what I meant when I said, is there an alternate?
I see. Okay. Yeah. Well, those areas are not necessarily open to international investors. No. They're only open to Emiratis and GCC investors, but they have performed equally well as the rest of the city.
Mm. So there also you think that there is, because also a lot of those areas that are within the city seem to be redeveloped at the moment. So mostly redeveloped for commercial real estate. The City Walk area is one example that I can think of. So that in your calculations and your reporting goes into the side of the commercial properties.
Somewhere like City Walk, yes. I mean, we've just started to see some residential real estate being launched at the back of City Walk, but the main focus has been on retail. It's going through a bit of a repositioning to introduce commercial office space, presumably to create feeder traffic for all the retail. Mm. But it's all about mixed-use developments in Dubai and has always been, as you know.
Interesting that, Faisal, on renovation, because this is truly a new trend that we see in Dubai. And surely that is a more sustainable way of building or developing the real estate market in Dubai as a whole. So how much progress are we doing in that?
Absolutely. I mean, we're seeing this trend play out more strongly when it comes to commercial office space in particular. Mm. In Dubai today, we have about 118 million square feet of office space. And we've done some analysis around the age of our office buildings. So in the DIFC, more than half the office stock was built before 2010. The average age of an office building in the internet and media cities is 17 years. Now, in more mature cities, a 10-year-old office building is probably considered normal.
Brand new.
Yes, but here in Dubai, we move at the speed of light, and those buildings are now old. So barring refurbishments that have taken place, we've got old, tired, aging office stock. And we know businesses are laser-focused on being in the best buildings because it's linked to talent attraction and retention. And we've always had this model in the Middle East of demolish and rebuild. And actually, in the future, green financing is going to be your only development financing option. And if you demolish and rebuild, you have a much higher carbon footprint than you would if you renovate. And look, it's easy to say renovate our old office buildings, but it might not be financially viable. It might not be physically possible because the buildings are designed in a certain way. But ironically, a lot of our grade B office buildings are very well located in areas with complete infrastructure, with neighborhoods and communities around them. And that is a big opportunity that is yet to be tapped into in this market, but it will come with time.
So finally, Faisal, what is top of mind for you as a main risk for the positive scenario for Dubai real estate, for the continuation of this cycle?
I think for me, the biggest risk is a global recession, because I think it's very easy to forget sitting in Dubai when we're surrounded by a healthy economy with healthy KPIs. We've got, record numbers of visitors passing through the airport. This year, the airport will be the busiest in the world for the 10th year running. Our hotel occupancy levels are the highest in the world, despite the fact that we have such a high concentration of hotel rooms here. We have 150,000 rooms, and we're running at 78, 79% occupancy. We're the most popular tourist destination in the world. So as I say, for me, the risk is if we have a global economic recession, the impact will be felt here. And I think we do need to keep that in mind going forward.
So have I missed my opportunity to buy if I still haven't bought now? We're 30% higher than in 2020. We're not at 2014 levels yet. Have I missed the opportunity?
Probably not. I think this cycle still has a little more steam left in it before prices or the growth rate at least starts to slow. So no, you haven't.
It's good news. Thank you.
Thanks,
Faisal. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.